going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
He was elected with momentum. He's governed with occasional headwinds. He admits he hasn't done everything right, but says he and the city are moving in the right direction. This weekend, we look back and to the future from the halfway mark. It's 2 years for Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Brandon Johnson became mayor in May of 2023, and Mayor Lori Lightfoot was ushered out after a sometimes stormy term. She occasionally clashed with members of an increasingly independent city council, and if you thought that group was independent, you should see this one. Still, and I am sure the mayor will tell you, things are getting done and efforts on issues like crime and the migrant influx are showing progress. We are recording this interview in the mayor's office here at City Hall, and thanks for having me in.
Thanks for having me, Craig, and I appreciate you and all of the work that you've done over the course of an incredible career.
Well, thank you very much. First, have to talk about the big headline as in the eve before we did this interview. A Pope from Chicago, from the Southland. How's that feel?
Oh, this is exciting. This is, you know, by far one of the most, if not the most exciting thing that has happened for the people of Chicago. Born in Chicago, returned to Chicago, was educated in Chicago, and represents, I believe, the core tenets of our faith, which is that when you do unto the least of these, you do unto to me, as Jesus Christ eloquently expressed. And this Pope's vision for the globe is one that aligns with my faith. He comes from a deep, deep level of appreciation for workers' rights. And as someone who is a part of the labor movement, I couldn't be more thrilled to have the type of Chicago representation that will, you know, help crystallize our hope and aspirations and our faith around the world.
Well, and we will obviously be hearing more and more about that in the coming weeks, but let's talk about the other thing that's coming up in the coming weeks, and that is summer. Traditionally a time for concern about restless young people, some of them violent. The city has plans to try to thwart rowdy groups from gathering and growing, whether downtown or in the neighborhoods. How ready do you feel the city is?
Well, we're ready. You know, what I've experienced as a father, as a public school teacher, as a resident of the city of Chicago, what I've experienced raising my family on the west side of Chicago is something that really guides my efforts to ensure that public safety always remains, community safety always remains at the top of our list. And, you know, there's clear evidence that our investments are working. You know, April was the fewest amount of homicides since 1962. We've seen a decline in violent crime across the city, over 22, almost 23%. Now, You know, I'm not going to, you know, suggest that somehow we've done enough, but we've clearly come a long way. There's a lot more work for us to do, you know, and we're going to make sure that we do everything in our power to protect the residents of this city. But it also requires us to invest in young people. 29,000 summer jobs. It's the largest increase that we've seen in a generation, a 45% increase, where we've seen evidence of youth employment. We've seen it in Austin on the west side where I live, where violent crime has gone down in the 15th police district in particular. And the number one community that hired the most amount of young people came out of the Austin community, almost 1,700 young people. So again, there's more work for us to do in front of us, but clearly we're moving in the right direction as investments go up and violence continues to go down. That is the pathway to build, you know, a better, stronger, and a much safer city.
But even you said at the announcement for the jobs program that, you know, it's only 29,000. You wanted more.
I did.
Have there been any businesses or any other philanthropies, organizations that have stepped up to boost that number? So that it's more, because obviously a lot more than 29,000 people want to have something to do.
No, that's absolutely right. I'm glad you highlighted that. You know, I pushed in the budget for 30,000. We still received 1,000 more than the previous summer, you know, and 51,000 young people applied for those summer jobs. So it's evident that our young people want to discover their purpose. They want to be able to contribute. One of the things that we did in addition to our summer youth employment is that we developed a pilot program with Streets and Sanitation, where we hired 75 graduating seniors from our public schools to work in Streets and Sanitation to give them the opportunity to have a good paying job and to be a part of a union. Well, of those 75, 55 of those seniors stayed and they're full-time employees. This summer, that same program has attracted 100 seniors, and we're going to give those graduating seniors the same opportunity. Look, many businesses as well as the philanthropic community have helped us, particularly around our CVI, you know, our community violence interventionists, right? And so those are other ways in which businesses and the philanthropic community has contributed to employment, which again continues to show evidence that it's driving violence down in the city of Chicago. The last thing that I will just add is that I believe there are more people who want to do more businesses, the philanthropic community, the full force of government, but we are moving in the right direction and we're going to continue to show up for the people of Chicago.
And now I'm the first one to acknowledge that these kinds of issues aren't just about policing, but some are straight policing issues. And let's talk at least about one of them. People have gotten the message, I believe, that ShotSpotter, the gunshot detection technology, didn't deliver the results that its sales pitch promised. But they keep asking, what is the type of technology that can be used to better combat gun violence? We've heard that things are being considered, proposals have been made. Is anything coming even close to being something that would satisfy? How far away are we? The summer's here.
Well, as you indicated, ShotSpotter did not prove itself to be an effective tool, right? We're talking $60 million. That's equivalent to 1,000 police officers. And the number of false deployments were just astronomical, right? And I know the residents of the city of Chicago want us to ensure that $60 million of our tax dollars are going towards something that actually works. And so what has worked? We leveraged the Democratic National Convention to add another helicopter. That is a form of technology. With we have three new helicopters now. And the things that they're able to do are far more sophisticated than they have been in the past, right? When you look at the way we have reshifted our detective division, where we've hired 200 more detectives, but that wasn't it. We are using new technology for our detectives to be able to solve not just homicides, but to be able to solve violent crimes that happen that do not necessarily lead to a death, right? And so as we have better technology and better tools that are available for law enforcement to be able to solve crime, to be able to prevent crime, to interrupt crime, that's that's my goal, is to make sure that we have that type of technology that that works. Now, in terms of just shot detection, that's just one aspect. And we're looking into the requests for proposals that we put out. We're looking at the different entities that applied, and you know, we'll go through it. But again, the goal of this particular appropriation was to help first responders respond faster to incident. It was mischaracterized, I believe, intentionally, to help a corporation get a major contract with the city of Chicago. I'm going to tell people the truth. I'm going to be straight up with individuals, with the people of Chicago, to ensure that they know exactly what and why I'm doing something. And that's something that I have to do a better job at, you know, admittedly. If there's one thing that I know that I have to do a better job at, is making sure that when I make a decision, that the residents of this city understand what that decision entails and why we are doing it.
Mm. Let's talk about decisions. Let's talk about some that you're going to have to make and some of the headlines that have been swirling around. The CTA board reportedly is being asked to approve your chief operating officer, John Robertson, as the new agency president. I know you haven't formally made that announcement, but he's not the only one whose name is being talked about. Your chief of staff, Christina Passione-Zayas, is in line to be, apparently in line to be interim CEO of the Chicago Public Schools, and the Chicago Housing Authority has been without a permanent leader for a while. So, and you're getting pushback and questions from people about how these decisions are being made and why they're being made. First off, is there anything you want to say about the two big names being talked about, and that's John Robertson and Christina Passione-Zayas?
Well, look, John and Tina have been incredible leaders. They've been with me from the very beginning. John was the manager, essentially, of the Democratic National Convention, the most successful convention for any political party that this country has ever experienced. And, you know, he has managed that. Once upon a time, he was over aviation and buildings under Richard M. Daley. So here's someone who has just a wide range of skills and discipline, quite frankly, as a real effective administrator. Tina has been a state senator. She's been on the Illinois CERT Board of Education. She's got her PhD, doctorate degree in education. She was part of the initial formation of what we now refer to as sustainable community schools, working at Clemente and Humboldt Park. So these are two very, very highly skilled, highly intelligent Chicagoans. You know, as far as those particular sister agencies, we've done national searches. I've been engaged in national searches from the very beginning of my administration, looking at a whole host of leaders. So Dr. Ige, for instance, was the result of a national search, but also the result of a national search led us to Mike McMurray right here in Chicago, right? So, you know, national searches do not necessarily, you know, yield the best person to carry out my vision. What I've made it very clear from the very beginning is that the people that I entrust to run these agencies or these departments have to reflect the values in which I ran on. The people of Chicago elected me to build something better. They elected me to build something stronger. They elected me to make us safer. And the leadership, you know, that I've put in place have carried out that vision. So these two individuals are highly skilled and incredibly talented, and I've enjoyed having them as my core leadership team. But as you know, I have not made any official decision in that regard for CTA or CPS.
But continuing the speculation, though, if those decisions were made, does that not take out your two of your most trusted, most capable top officials who've been helping you get through some of the toughest things that you had to do? And you know, does that leave you shorthanded?
Well, I mean, first of all, thank you for, again, acknowledging their incredible skill set, not just the Democratic National Convention. Tina was the point person that helped us move over 4,000 individuals who were sleeping on the floors in police districts, and there was no answer nationally where the Biden administration, the federal government, left cities really to figure it out on our own, and it left us incredibly vulnerable. And so now we built a one system initiative out of that crisis, where now not one single family that is caught seeking shelters on a waiting list. It's the first time in over a decade. So you're absolutely right. These two individuals are very talented. That's why I've not made, you know, any, you know, announcement or pronouncement, because they are an intricate part of my administration. And two of them, both of them, have the respect of political leadership at the state level, at the federal level, and at the county level. And they certainly have respect at the local level.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore. We are talking with Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson as he marks 2 years in office, and we are speaking in his office. I'd like to talk a little.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals. But you're scrolling your phone, and maybe you're in bed. Because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
A bit about your relationship with the city council. You've described yourself often as the collaborator in chief, but I know you know that there are complaints, not just from your critics, who say sometimes that their voices and opinions they feel are not valued. Where are we seeing the best examples of collaboration, and what do you say about people who, I think it would be fair to say, very much support your vision and what you're doing, but sometimes question whether things are going about in the right way?
Well, first of all, you know, I've enjoyed my time leading in this moment, and there are incredible voices at the city council level that have, you know, the true spirit of what this administration is about. In fact, many of those individuals, if not all of them, that share my values, in one way or another, I help them get elected as an organizer, connecting them with the labor movement. So I have a great deal of respect for the work that they've done. Look, I understand their frustration, right? I mean, the speed in which, and perhaps this is something that I underestimated, the speed in which we wanted and still want to create transformation in this city has not gone at the rate or the velocity in which we want it to go. And that has been frustrating, and something that I know that in retrospect, as I reflect on these last couple of years, that I spent a lot of time working to build up my administration, bringing in the Chicago Police Department to look at strategies and how we get guns off the streets, right? Bringing in our, you know, public health experts to figure out, you know, how the Department of Public Health can better show up for people, right? And so as I was standing up my administration, you know, I did not do the necessary work to also stand up the coalition that helped get me elected, right? And that's something that I do take, you know, ownership of, and it was an error on my part. Focusing solely on running government and not spending the time necessary to establish stronger, more cemented relationships so that we can do the work is something that I'm going to get better at. And it's why we're engaging with city council much earlier. We're taking some of the practices that I had when I was a legislator as a Cook County commissioner, where President Preckwinkle and her team engaged commissioners earlier in the year so that when we get to the point where we have to make decisions for the budget, there's more information that the city council has to work with. We're putting together this working group, bringing in more voices to help support the work that we have to do collectively as a city. You know, look, the what's most important, I believe, in this moment is that I can admit that I'm human and I make mistakes, and there are things that I could have done better, even in the midst of all of the things that I had to respond to. Moving forward, there's going to be regular check-ins, right? We're meeting with caucus leaderships. There are different caucuses that represent the city council as a very diverse body. And again, we're also meeting with individuals and other groups that also have skin in the game. That's something that I'm prepared to do more of, and to do it more frequently, and again, do it earlier, so that as a city, the public will understand the what and the why we're making decisions.
Where do you believe things have worked?
Oh, yes,
exactly,
thank you.
As you want.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. You actually did ask that in the first part of your question. Thank you for bringing it back. So, you know, look at what just happened this week. You know, green social housing, that's something that I ran on, and we got it done. Abolishing the sub-minimum wage, where we increased the wages of tipped workers that are overwhelmingly black and brown women. Paid time off, the one of the largest cities, if not the largest city in America, that has offered up 10 days off for 1.1, 1.2 million workers. We have balanced two budgets without furloughs and cuts and layoffs, right? I mean, these are some examples. We built the One System Initiative. This is something that the people of Chicago elected me to do, was to respond to homelessness, and we're doing that. You know, so I can look at all of those different investments, the $1.25 billion bond investment, right? The largest in the city's history. We did that together. We're already cutting ribbons across the city, 4,000 affordable units that we've built for housing, 1,800 that are currently under construction. We'll have another 4,600 affordable homes within the next 16 months or so. And again, you're seeing how coming together collectively to show up for our young people has been beneficial. I think the other example is the fact that, you know, Mayor Harry Washington left the earth and there were 19 mental health clinics. When I was elected, there were only 5, but we reopened 3 of them. So, you know, between, you know, youth employment, between mental and behavioral health services, between building more affordable homes, responding to workers as the most pro-worker city in America, even with the challenges, right, that we've had, we've been able to transform this city. Once upon a time, Craig, and you covered this, during the rubber stamp era, what did you get? You got school closures, you got the dismantling of public housing, you had, you know, financial malfeasance. And so clearly rubber stamp created chaos, that even with some of the rub and the tension that exists, we've accomplished more under these circumstances than any of the circumstances when you had rubber stamp city councils.
I do want to ask, though, about, and this is not necessarily in relation to you, but in relation to the movement of progressives. It seems as if there's not the same unity. I think people are realizing that it's not even progressives aren't a monolith. But what is the future of progressivism? There are too many people, or a lot of people, who claim that banner, who wear that mantle, and arguments about who should and shouldn't have it. Is that movement still vibrant and moving forward?
Well, I think what we're experiencing right now is that, you're absolutely right, that there are varying degrees of spectrum within the progressive, you know, ideological space, right? And, you know, there were, you know, people who were attached to our movement that were grateful for the work that we, you know, did around the migrant mission. There were others that had, you know, deep concern for different reasons, right? But yet we were able to manage that and work through it. There are differences that do exist within our orientation, because it's not just an ideological frame, it's an experience as well. I grew up in circumstances that are different than other folks who are within the progressive frame, right? And so the way we approach transformation is impacted, you know, by those experiences, right? And I think for the future of our movement, it's why in my reflection, I've been very clear that it wasn't enough for me to establish and build up my administration, that the movement also needed care, and it needed me to better communicate. It's one of the things that I've experienced, especially as I get older, you know, where I better understand my father. So my father, especially as we get older, you know, we would challenge him a little bit, like, you know, Dad, you never said, or you never did. And his position was, well, you know, I went to work and I worked double shifts and I worked multiple jobs. So I figured with all of that work that I was doing, you knew that I cared for you and that I loved you. And I think I took a similar approach, that if we just did the good work, that people would just know about it. And what I've learned is that whatever is required to get the work done, you have to put forth that same level of energy to be able to communicate with people the what and the why. And that's why we're gonna do more town halls, we're doing these lakeside chats, we're visiting senior homes and facilities, we're going to churches, talking to businesses, community groups, because I have a responsibility to not just do the work, but to do the necessary work to effectively communicate what we're doing and why we're doing it. And as we do that and organize people around the what and the why, I'm confident that our movement will sustain.
I've got to ask a Trump question, but I don't want to ask the ones that we ask you all the time, which is, you know, yeah, where's the money being cut? Those are the things that we're always talking about. My question is, what is your feeling, especially as a former social studies teacher, what is your feeling about this, of the Trump administration working to eliminate the stories and pictures and any evidence of the history and achievements of Blacks, Latinos, and many others? That's the stuff that's going on behind the scenes that we aren't talking about because of the outrageous things that are being talked about. But how do you feel about that systematic, I won't say erasure of history, but maybe you would?
Well, it's certainly his goal to erase American history. The story of Black resistance is American history. The story of indigenous people, that is the story of America. You know, and whenever an oppressive regime looks to put in place its stamp on a region, the first thing that they tend to go after, it's culture and art and history. And so, you know, I think the solipsistic urges of this administration is far more damaging and threatening to our democracy, to your point, I believe, that you're making, than we are acknowledging. We talk about, you know, the sort of egocentric nature of Donald Trump, and those are characteristics and designs of people who have led oppressive regimes before. And that's why this contract in particular with the Chicago Teachers Union was so important, because it protects Black history, it protects LGBTQ plus rights students, it protects the value of veteran workers as he goes after veteran workers and public employees, right? These are people who have institutional knowledge and understand the value of public accommodations. So my position is that I have to do everything in my power to beat back the oppressive nature of this administration, and whether that's through legislation, whether that's through the legal arena, whether that's through organizing and protesting, all of it has to be bundled together in order to resist what is clearly tyranny that's happening right now in America.
Do you think that that resistance is going to gain traction or regain traction? Because in some cases, the people on the president's side use the language of the civil rights mm-hmm. movement, saying all people should be treated equally and mm-hmm. such, in order to do what they're doing.
Yeah, thank you for raising that up, you know, because that was something that Dr. Keene was also very aware of, and he warned the buzzwords that were being used. You know, the right to work was a terminology, right, that was used a generation ago. And so am I confident in our ability to win? Absolutely. Like, look, generations prior have had to defeat, you know, similar ideology. And so I'm going to just cling to the hopes and aspirations of all of our ancestors, that the evolution of our democracy will not be stymied because of this particular moment, and that we won't surrender our humanity, and we'll continue to push back against these oppressive policies. And I'm confident that the arc towards justice will continue to bend in the right direction.
Well, thank you very much. That is Mayor Brandon Johnson. Thanks for spending the half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide, or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball, the game's official home for games, is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.